Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Archivist Bets on Sexy Witches, a podcast from the Geek Girls' perspective. Please tell me you guys can hear me.
Yes.
Please. Yes?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, good, because my phone said, you are not connected. Call in the host. And I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, my God. I'm here. So that's good. Okay. So, yes, so we are here. This is part two of Animation August, something we've been doing now on Sexy Witches since we've been doing it from the beginning. And since this, there's not one, but two Batman animated films that are coming out of space about a month from each other, one already came out and one's coming up, I decided for this Animation August, we are going to talk about one of my favorite animated things ever on television. And that for me was Batman the Animated Series. Not only was it influential and changed the lexicon and the rogues gallery forever, it also was it still holds up to this day as some of the best writing in Batman and clearly the best vocal work, and we'll talk about that. Behind it all, behind the man, was a man named Bruce Timm. Bruce Timm was the creator of the animated DC Universe. He produced it with the original Batman the Animated Series, and of course it grew onto several different kinds of shows, going Justice League Unlimited, Green Lantern, we can go on, plus a lot of great movies as well. DC Universe thrived under Bruce Timm. He took a little time off, and then he came back this summer with his first produced Harley and Batman, which is on VOD right now and is about to come out on DVD today, actually. So, before we get into all that, though, let me talk to my sexy witches and see how they're all doing. So, let's first talk to my sexy witch. She was off last week, so we'll bring her on first. She's in Seattle, and she's doing her thing in Seattle, and her new thing is called Jump Scares. It's her YouTube channel. She's on episode number 8, so check it out if you haven't seen it. If you don't watch her on YouTube, you can also read her in print in Long Living Dead magazine. She's a LARPer. She loves Harley Quinn, and we'll talk about Harley Quinn quite a bit on this episode, I am sure. And, of course, she's just a regular badass sexy werewolf, werewitch, Queenie Todd. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Want to howl?
Yeah, of course.
Him.
Ow!
That's why I tune in. Right there.
Yep. So, great. So, How has Seattle been treating you? You said you've been super, super busy. What are you busy doing?
Yeah. Well, I've been busy just doing a lot of stuff for the YouTube channel that I started up again. I've steadily been doing videos, which is awesome. I've been having regular art days with my best friend, sister, soulmate person, you know, and yeah, I've just been like crazy busy because I'm trying to actually put myself out there and just do it.
Yay!
Right on.
So I've got really weird videos that I make on my YouTube channel, but they're entertaining, I think.
Oh well, they're edited. You edit the crap out of those, man. I've watched them. They're just like you're cutting like a crazy woman. And not only that, I also know you had to figure out how to cut so YouTube wouldn't cut anything from you. And that's a talent unto itself. So now you've got that down. So you're rocking
it.
So
I'm trying.
So keep up the good fight, man. Content providers united. All right. Hold on to that. I got to move on and bring on a couple more people, and then we'll continue. We got a couple things to talk about before we get to our juicy Bruce Tim talk tonight. So let's go across the East Coast to Virginia and talk to my girl in Clifton Ford. She is my partner in crime at most of the East Coast Monster Mania conventions. We've been doing a lot of those lately. She also is, you can see her on Plan 9 from Outer Space Remake as a featured zombie. This girl is everywhere and everyone. And we see her at our local media convention, rocking it as a volunteer, in front, behind, there, anywhere. Find her. Look for her. The sexy porn witch, Erin Marie.
Hello.
Hello.
I found out at this last convention that I have a reputation, apparently. Like, some people came up to me and were like, you're Erin. And I'm like, I am. How do you know this?
Oh, no, they know me by name. Ah!
Run away.
I don't have that sound effect. That'd be awesome right now. Run away. Okay, so how has Virginia been treating you?
Very good. I've been back almost a week. I was in Pennsylvania for a week, which was nice.
Yeah, you just went to Monster Mania in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Tell me what that was about.
Oh, man. That was good. Let me just say that my photo op with Kate Beckinsale, it looks like I'm with a wax mannequin. She's so fucking perfect and beautiful. And every single picture she was taking, like, she lifted her foot up, like, a second before it was shot. Ta-da! It was just a little pop of the heel. Poor Val Kilmer looked awful. Be prepared for this because you're going to Hunt Valley next week, right?
I've seen some of the photos from Monster Mania, and he looked gaunt. It really concerned me.
Like his clothes were falling off of him. He kept his earphones in the whole time, and I think it was so people wouldn't have, like, he wouldn't have to respond to people, because I heard him try to talk to the person in front of me when we were getting our autograph, and it's barely audible.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I still love him, and I hope he feels better if he's ill, if he gets better. And I hope to see him at Monster Mania. Yeah. So
it's throat cancer, like Michael Douglas had. Yeah. I didn't go to any of the panels. Because I was very, very, very busy that weekend. But Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, they had their IT virtual reality bus there. So we got to go through that, which was nice.
So how was that? So it was nice? Because I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, I mean, when you first get into the bus, they have you waiting in this, like, tunnel that's like a sewer, and it sprays you with water, and it fucks with you before you go in. And you put on these virtual reality helmets, and it takes you through the sewers. You go down through the sewers, and you see, like, balloons popping with blood, and it, like, pops up right in front of your face. It's great. I was, like, studying his makeup work. I was like, wow, this is really good.
So that's awesome that you got to do that. I'm sorry to hear about Val Kilmer. I hope he gets better. On the positive side of Monster Mania, Maryland just announced two sets of names today. One of them, which was at your Monster Mania, is Soska Sisters. I've never been to a convention with the Soskas there. So they got announced today. And one of my favorites, Dina Myers from Starship Troopers, is going to be there. She's one of my favorite actresses. I love her so much. And she sang Shake It Off to me at the first Awesome Con I went to. That was the Starship Troopers panel with Rico Ruffnick. It was so good. It was Casper Van Dien, Dina Myers, and the guy who played Clarence Watkins, which was my boss's name. So we used to really make fun of him a lot when I was in the park service. Watkins, you were trying to be a hero, Watkins. No, sir, trying to kill some bugs, sir. Sorry, I digress. Anyway. All right.
I was going to say, other than that, Peter Weller was awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, I heard him talking to a film geek in front of me about how he learned some things from Dario Argento in the directing department. And he opened up like a flower as soon as I was like, you know, the episodes that you directed of Sons of Anarchy were the best ones. And he just like, he blossomed. He talked a lot. I don't think I absorbed much, but it was just fun to be talked at by RoboCop.
Well, I want to tell him about it. Where I worked in Morristown, not too far from where you were, Aaron. You know, I took you there, right? The Jockey Hollow unit. Where the woods are. There was a film that used to play in the visitor center there, about 15 minutes about the soldiers in the huts. And in the very, very beginning of that, Peter Weller is the deserter in that film, and he runs away. It's one of the first things he's ever done. And the story goes, because it was slightly before my time, is he went on a looking spree to find it, and we had a copy, and he got a copy, and then he sent one of us, I don't know who has it, a signed copy of RoboCop 2 poster somewhere.
Nice.
So somewhere in the park, somebody has it. We don't know what happened to it. Anyway, I've always wanted to tell him that story and see his end of it, you know, because I have this piece. I want the other piece. So anyway, so I digress again. I'm all excited about your lineup. So,
well, the other one that was really interesting was Jonathan, and I can never pronounce his name correctly. Is it Kukulon? I don't know. He was Short Round in Temple of Doom. He was in the Goonies.
Yeah.
But he was telling us all kinds of stories. Like, he loved talking about the Goonies. He was talking about how when they built the pirate ship on the closed set that they had, each one of them had a handler to walk them backwards down the tunnel and throw them into the water so that when they popped up was the first time they saw the pirate ship.
Nice.
It sounds like it was I would love to listen to him talk about Goonies especially, because that movie is actually one of my, you know, it's got some of the best child performances in the 80s in it by far. And that's something that Spielberg, we were talking about on another show recently, to blend in and bring all of you all in. I got one more person to bring you on, Aaron. We got to bring the other Aaron on, and then we got to bring you all in for a really important chat. So on my other side of the coast, we go back to the Southern California. We got my cuz, the L.A. correspondent. He is Aaron Kogan, the singing waiter. Well, not anymore. But he is a pin trader, and he's our media convention geek extraordinaire in the Buena Vista area of California. I was just there a month ago to see him, and it was awesome. We went to Disneyland for a day, which was an adventure. I'm still recovering from weird rashes from the water, believe it or not. I've been breaking out ever since. Yeah, I know. I don't know what happened. I got the Disney rash. I know there's this legendary Disney rash, but I guess I got it. So, you know, but it was still a lot of fun. And Lily, you know, we have memories. And, you know, it's always fun when Aaron and I were trying to stump each other on trivia. Once in a while, I'd throw something out, and he'd usually get it right. And then he'd throw something out at me, and I'd get it right. We were all pretty right, usually. Sometimes I was off maybe a cunt hair. But, you know, that's about it. So how is your life been treating you last month?
Pretty good. We're roasting alive out here in triple digits, record heat. We're breaking all kinds of records. But other than that, life is beautiful.
Well, that's fabulous, and thank you for coming on kind of last moment, because unfortunately my guest had to drop out. She was in Atlanta, and Dragon Con is staring everybody in the face, and they're in panic mode. So, you know, we do that. You know, so we'll talk about Dragon Con a little bit later.
I'm a big fan of the DC animated movies and series, especially Batman the Animated Series. I have a Batman joke for it, if you want.
Oh, well, okay. So we
go for it.
Okay, go ahead. Tell
your
joke. All
right, here's my Batman joke.
Okay.
What does Batman keep in his freezer?
I don't know. What does Batman keep in his freezer?
Just ice.
Okay.
Come on, that is a great joke. That's the best Batman joke ever.
I like that joke.
I like it.
It was a good joke.
I like it. Yeah, it took me a second.
Solid joke,
I was like,
man.
Oh, it is solid, man. All right, well, fist bump to you all the way on the West Coast. But before we get into the more fun talking about, because obviously we're going to have a lot to talk about, Batman's always a good subject. But first things first, of course, so we got rocked again. Like, George A. Romero passes this year, and we're all really, really bummed about this. And I've had the icon for George Romero as my profile since it. I just, you know, it's about respect to the man, you know, and what he meant to horror geeks and to genre in general, how important his film was. Whether you like it or not, it's an important film. So this weekend I wake up this morning, first thing Sunday morning, and I look down and it goes, Toby Hooper dead at 74. And I'm like, why am I changing Romero with Toby Hooper? We've lost two, boom. I don't even know what to say about it. I already talked about it, actually. I was on the Necrocasticon, which is a shout out Tommy Clark and my boys. Thank you for having me on. We talked about, unusual films of Toby Hooper, but I don't know if people really understand what Toby Hooper meant to, especially the modern horror fan. Like, I'm the Toby Hooper fan. I am. I really love his work, by the way. I absolutely love most of his movies. But there are people that he's like the Bible. He is the beginning and end of film school, of writing, of framing, of tracking. He does all these on no budgets, you know, and he produces effective scares. And he's and even though maybe some of his later stuff after, you know, was not, you know, doesn't hold up to the earlier stuff, but that's true of most actors. But he had that solid body of work from the 70s to the late 80s. And we got to witness some of his stuff. And it was so funny because it was like in places you wouldn't expect, like Poltergeist, for example. I mean, all of us thought we were seeing a nice little Spielberg movie, and, you know, it wasn't, you know, not at all.
I watched Life Force last night.
Oh, well, tell us, how do you like that movie, Matilda May?
Oh, my God, it's so great. Even though some parts are kind of very 80s, you know, and it kind of bleeds into the film. It's still really great. I love it. There's some genuine creepy moments in it. Love it.
And Matilda May is so beautifully photographed in that movie. I mean, she's like, you know, she's
gorgeous.
It's not that she's gorgeous, even. I mean, that's part of it, clearly. I mean, oh my God. But it's also the menace. Just how, like, she doesn't have two fucks to give. And she doesn't let anything bother her at all. She is completely calm through the entire situation. And it's
totally
like,
control.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. I really enjoy it. Sexually charged. Patrick Stewart in a small role. A really small role for Patrick Stewart, but that's always a good thing, you know. So, yeah, I really like Life Force and some decent special effects. I actually think they could do, like, the space stuff actually looks pretty good. You know, it doesn't look any worse than any other film in that time period. Matter of fact, I would actually say they probably put quite a bit of money into it.
Oh, I bet. Because that, those,
yeah, I seem to remember it had a big budget at the time.
Yeah. So we're on the scale of Tobe Hooper dumb and fandom, where do you put your love of Life Force, Queenie?
My love of Life Force?
Yeah.
It's not quite Texas Chainsaw, but it's definitely better than that remake he did. What was it called? It was a newer remake he did. I didn't like it.
Oh, the Toolbox Murders?
Yeah, I didn't like it. I like the old version. Just how I feel.
Well, the old version's a video nasty. It has its own level,
yep,
of importance. So
exactly.
The video nasties are going to play into this year's Madness again, by the way. And by the way, I am going to be dropping hints tonight on the Madness because I've been writing the Madness rules. I started writing them this
week.
Crazy. And so I,
right.
Yeah. And if you're on the judges thread, Queenie, you'll go see I've dropped a bunch of rough drafts. So,
okay.
Of the bonus points are done. Wild cards are done.
Yeah, you've been dropping some really intriguing hints lately, too.
Yeah, I've got... we're going to have tonight at the top of the community calendar, like one or two things in, I'm going to give an early bird special tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have our first Madness event.
Oh, excellent.
Now. And we'll get to that later because it's about special screenings. So anyway... we're going to keep on going on this, but I'm just like, I've been like kind of bummed. I was like, I'm playing Tobe Hooper Die, and people are like, who is he? I was like, well, have you seen Poltergeist? Oh, yeah. Everyone's seen Poltergeist at least, but, I liked some of his Gun for Hire things. If you listen to the Necrocasticon, I talked about I'm Dangerous Tonight, which was a USA movie. Made for TV movie he did, starring the girl from Sleepwalkers, and Anthony Perkins and Dee Wallace are in it. And it's like, nobody remembers this movie but me. It's about this psycho dress. Like, there's this like guy unearths an evil red cape, and then she, like, the innocent girl, makes it into a hot red party dress and becomes a whorish person. And that's her own words, by the way. But if you're a really bad person or you have lower inhibitions, like, like the typical slasher tropes, you do drugs, you have sex, you become a raving maniac and you murder people, right? And Dee Wallace gets to play the mean girl in this. So, she doesn't usually get to do that. And this is late 80s, too. Or actually, it's not even late 80s.
Wow.
1990. So that she gets to actually be the villainess in the movie for a bit. It's kind of cool. So, spoiler alert. So look for I'm Dangerous Tonight. It's not available anywhere. I'm sure somewhere on – I hope someone on YouTube has posted it or something. Hint, hint.
I'm actually a big fan of his 1986 remake of Invaders from Mars. And I know
a lot of people are.
Yeah, I've heard some people talking that it's cheesy or whatever else, but I disagree. The original had a real golly gee willikers kind of spirit to it because it's very much from the viewpoint of the little boy, and I think he was staying true to the heart of that. I enjoyed the hell out of Invaders from Mars. I might have actually seen that a couple times in the theater when it came out, and you have to give a big shout out to him using John Dykstra and Stan Winston for creature and visual effects, because, damn, it's a beautiful-looking film.
There's the creepy moments in that movie, like, genuinely creepy. Like, there's a moment where they're putting implants in the back of necks of humans, and it's really friggin' frightening. It's like, ooh. It's pretty effective work there. I have always thought that was good design, too. I actually think that a lot of people did poo-poo it when it came out. I remember that. But I've noticed and more people are finding this film. So,
good.
And that's encouraging. I had to make a confession. I've never seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I have to fix that. I have never actually seen the second one. Seen one,
there
I've seen three and four, but I've never seen two, which I know is kind of important because that's a Tobey Hooper directed movie. And it's got Dennis Hopper in it and a bunch of other people. And, oh, Bill Moseley is in it, you know.
Yep.
Of course, I got to watch it. I did notice today that it's on, Stars on Demand, so I'll be able to watch it after the show. So I'll let you know how I feel about Tobey Hooper's Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. So that's what I'll do after I'm off air tonight. Go ahead, Aaron. I was going to say...
I was going to say, everything that you were saying about Tobey Hooper as a director and being so influential, Rob Zombie said almost verbatim the same thing that you were saying.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's kind of funny because I wouldn't think Rob Zombie, really a student of Tobey Hooper looking at Rob Zombie's films, but apparently really, really, really influential to him.
Well, I mean, he is doing essentially the same story, just really inflated. If you stare down House of a Thousand Corpses, it's very, very similar, clearly influenced. But, you know, he took his own spin on it. I did see something about Tobey Hooper, Zombie talking about Tobey Hooper. But, it was really... One of the things I liked about, I have this really awesome DVD of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it has all these other cuttings and edges where they show you how they did it. And here's another thing. A lot of that stuff was done on one camera. I mean, they were repeating those shots over and over again and doing them exactly the same every time so they could edit. And we're not talking digital editing. We're talking, you know, old school editing, you know, really taking knives and celluloid and splicing, but watching them do that made me a better filmmaker. Because when I moved forward and I was in my one and only time I took an NYU film class, it was on digital editing and how to do pacing. And because I saw how they did it and I had one camera, I knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. I shot 30 shots for a 4-minute film. And the guy looks at me and goes, "Did you do that many shots?" I go, "Yeah, they're only like a few seconds apiece." And he's like, "Okay, you know," but I got an A+ in that show, you know, so I just want to say that my project was A+. I pissed on M. Shyamalan and got an A+, so, you know, which is easy to do. But anyway, I digress. Anything about, we want to mention about, Aaron Marie, I was going to bring you in. Do you have any feelings about Tobey Hooper yourself?
Well, as a person who absolutely hates Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I respect where people actually like it, I guess. I was sad, you know, because he did mean a lot to the genre. There are a lot of people that were influenced by him and made films because of him. Not to mention, I haven't seen Life Force. I do need to see that, but I do like Texas Chainsaw Massacre too.
Yeah, I think you'd like that. I think you'd really like Life Force.
Life Force is much more up your alley, I guarantee it. It's almost gothic. It's pretty fun. It's definitely just watch it. You'll enjoy it. It's an amusing movie, especially if you don't know anything going into it. It's a real lot of fun. So it's one of my favorites. My all-time favorite, though, of the ones not counting the big three, which is Poltergeist and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies, is Funhouse, which is also on the Video Nasty list. I love Funhouse. It's one of the only slashers I can honestly say I truly love. I don't like a lot of slashers. I'm bored by most of them, as you know. I've admitted to that quite a few times. I really like Funhouse, and I think it's because it's so well shot. I mean, it is a really beautiful-looking movie, and it's edited so tightly. Have any of you guys seen it?
No.
See? There it
is. I don't think I have.
Yes, I have. I watched it during one of the years of the madness.
You watched it probably during the Video Nasty year, I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure I did. I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked Funhouse a lot better.
It's on my list for this year.
Funhouse, Poltergeist, Salem's Lot.
Salem's Lot. A lot of people like.
Yep.
I love
Stephen
Salem's
King
Lot.
Had very kind words to say for Toby Hooper. Stephen King, unlike
Stanley
the Shining,
Kubrick.
Yeah, exactly. He had very kind words to say for Toby Hooper's adaption of Salem's Lot.
It's pretty good.
It was a really nice, faithful adaptation. It was good.
It was good enough, that's for sure. I was trying to think of what he did right before it. You know, we got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then you have
Eaten Alive.
Eaten Alive, yeah, with Robert Englund. Which followed it, and that also made the Video Nasty list, putting three of Toby Hooper's movies on the British Video Nasty list in 1983. He was notorious to begin with, but then he also like his movies became these legends unto themselves, and there are people that are devoted to Toby Hooper films, and they fight like cats and dogs. Toby Hooper fans are. I love their fandom because they all love Toby Hooper, but none of them agree what their favorite film is. None of them. Mm. They all argue on which one. I like this one. I like that one. And everyone's like Eat Alive and Life Force and Funhouse. You know, and they're so diverse. If you look at this body of work, it's so all over the map. It really doesn't matter. I just think it's like a wonderful.
Seems like to make films.
Cannibal buffet, you know what I'm saying? It's the spread, man. You get everything with Toby Hooper, and rest in peace to him, man. He had a lot of ups and downs in his personal life, but he leaves behind a legacy that will never be duplicated. And I'm gonna go and watch Dennis Hopper go get unhinged and give a toast to my man. So. So let's take a quick Joker break, and then I will be back in just a moment as we take a little bit of time to change notes. I hope the other sexy witches are finished from their break and join us shortly. It is Animation August, as we know, and Animation August is always a time to geek out on some of our favorite things that have been put on by the ink and paint clubs of old and new. And in this case, I am very much the high school graduate of the 90s going to college. And going to college, I'd go home and make sure I was in home in time for two shows in those days. And the first one was Animaniacs was on, and on Fox, on WB, and they had this wonderful lineup. And so we got to sit down and watch Animaniacs, but right after Animaniacs, you had Batman, the animated series. And I was already going to like the show. I'll be honest with you, I was already a big fan of Batman. Batman's my favorite, probably my favorite character in a list of characters of all time. I absolutely think the Joker is fascinating in every version he's ever existed in. I think that that's a character you can take so many different ways. It's like that's the diversity of these characters. They're so interesting and so well written. And these in particular were very well written for a TV show, though. It was surprisingly good. It was a little bit more, I would say, adult. That's one of the reasons why I started paying attention, because the scripts they were writing for these shows was different. It was not aimed at kids, and they weren't pulling their punches. Some very, very interesting, horrible things happened on Batman, the animated series. And so I started to become a huge fan, and especially of that first really, really almost abstract art first season. Like the animation on the first season is very, very stylized. I own that copy of the first season. It's become one of my favorite things I own is that set. And I've passed it to my daughter. She watches it now. And I wanted to talk about Bruce Timm and his universe he created starting with that show, because it's now so much bigger than that. And there's generations of kids that have been watching Bruce Timm on animated television. And so let's start with Queenie, though, because I know, Queenie, I know that you're a fan of Harley. And I'm not talking about the Suicide Squad Harley per se, but the older Harley. But where did you jump in? Did you jump in with the show, or did you jump in where she got expanded in the comic books? Where is your entrance to Bruce Timm's universe?
I was introduced to Harley in the show, because that's where she was born. She was born on the show.
I rewatched that episode last night, Joker's Favor, which is
yes.
I love that. It's like my favorite episode.
It's
not
so
that it's
good.
Really the best. It's really good. It's hysterical. Matter of fact, I just played a piece of it when I opened the show. That was what I was playing. It was Joker's Favor. It's also the introduction of Harley. But Harley really didn't get much done on that episode. She's not really.
No.
Matter of fact, Paul Dini, who's the writer on a lot of the show, he also gets a lot of credit because, like I said, he didn't pull punches from his scripts. They're really, really good. He just thought that it would just be funny to have this, like, you know, like Joker version Harley, and he wrote it for, Aaron Marie, what's the name of the woman from Days of Our Lives he wrote the part for?
Arlene Sorkin,
thank you. I knew she knew that. Arlene Sorkin. She wrote the part, they wrote the part specifically for her, and it was something like a one-off, but then, of course, look at us now.
She was inspired by Days of Our Lives Calliope, played by Arlene Sorkin.
Yep.
So, yeah, which I was a fan of Days of Our Lives, too, in the 80s. I know, that's a terrible thing to admit, but it was really good.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah,
Days of Our Lives
really,
in the
really
80s
good.
Was fantastic.
Really good.
It was the birth of it.
It was so good. Anyway, so get back to the 90s, and we're watching Batman, the animated series. And so, Queenie, so talk about, you saw her on the show. When did you actually become a true fan of Harley Quinn? Because she's become, not only is she like a villainess, but she's kind of become this like feminist LGBTQI icon for a lot of women and men too.
Well, the way I've felt about her has kind of evolved the way she's evolved, you know? Like, I've gone from like loving her because she is, you know, the old school Harley, where she wears the red and black, which are my power colors. And, you know, so let's just start there. Association with color here, you know.
Nice.
And she's funny, and she's snarky, and she's evil. And I loved all that about her. And then some, you know, and she just did what she wanted. She had no fucks to give. She only had fucks for her puddin', all right? Puddin' got all the fucks. And there's that whole abusive relationship thing she's dealing with. Like, that's a real thing, a really cool and interesting thing they put into a character to be real. You know, she loves a man who hates her. He doesn't give a shit about her. He's busy.
And once again, not pulling punches. That was something I was re-reviewing was the episode with Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's in a fucking negligee on his table trying to get his attention. So she's you know, she goes, "Don't you want to give your Harley a ride? Vroom, vroom."
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, my
rev up
know,
your Harley.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So rev up your Harley. I mean, it's like, oh my God, you know, I actually kind of surprised that they were letting us. I mean, granted, I was in my late teens, early 20s when it kicked in 1992. I graduated high school in 91. Okay. So I was a little bit more grown up. I can handle these, but there's some, I was like, are they really allowing us to watch some of this? Cause they were, there was that episode. There was also one with Poison Ivy. It's called Home and Garden. Home and Garden is probably one of my all-time favorite episodes of that any animated series. It is absolutely the most twisted story, and it's. Do you guys know which one this is?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that episode a lot.
Who wants to tell that this story? Do you want to tell it, Queenie, or Aaron Kogan? Do you want to tell this one, or?
No, no. Go ahead.
Because this is. Are you sure?
No. Yeah, you go.
Okay. So I might be. I didn't get to rewatch this one before the show. But let me see if I can remember exactly.
Okay.
Poison Ivy is released from prison. Okay. She has promised to reform herself, and so far, in about a 2-year span, has been a model citizen. Falls in love with some guy, moves out to the country, and raises 2 kids. Right? Happily ever after. Garden, botany, she's happy. And of course, Batman, being Batman, doesn't buy it for a hot minute. Like, not at all. Like, no way.
Of course not.
She can't be that perfect. But he can't crack her. She's just perfect. He can't crack her. And he starts to relent until Robin shows up and talks about her family. And he goes, his family goes, you know what? There's something wrong because her husband had 2 girls. And all this time, the twins have been boys. So all of a sudden, something's wrong. Like, there's the wrong kids. So Robin and Batman sneak into her basement and find these pods. And these pods open up, they have babies inside. And she's cultivating babies that grow quickly into little boys and then grow into a picture of what used to be her husband. I forget what happened to the real husband. I don't remember. He might be dead. They look like that for a while. But then they turn into hideous monsters. And, of course, once they become hideous monsters, they attack people and break shit and try to kill Batman because you got to try to kill Batman. But I'm not even doing it justice. It is one of the most deranged stories. And it's all about how she can't have, see, she tried to give it a go with this guy, but she can't have children and she'll never be accepted by society and she just totally flips, you know. And Harley becomes her balance later on because, you know, when Poison Ivy's unhinged, she is massively unhinged. And I was like, you know, really freaky that, you know, she thinks that society is going to judge her on this one thing about being a woman. But you know what? A lot of women feel that way. And it's an amplification, especially when you're in your 20s. It's an amplification of what we're going through because, you know, we're trying to figure it out. We don't know what to do with our bodies yet, but we're trying to figure it out, you know, what we want to do, what we're going to be, who we're going to become, and we're all confused. Now, we're not going to go crazy and make pretty hideous baby bean pod creatures. That's Poison Ivy. But that's what science fiction is good about. That's why I like this show. It's showing issues that people have. Buffy was, Vampire Slayer was very good at this too. Taking a real situation and amplifying it to its highest sound, highest vibe, right? The most exaggerated thing you can come up with. And it becomes a metaphor for a lot of really interesting stuff. So anyway, I always thought, wow, did they really let us watch that? Because it is. Do you remember that episode? It is so creepy.
It is a very creepy episode. I loved it.
There was a lot aimed at adults and a lot of adult innuendo. I was rewatching stuff earlier, and I couldn't believe the bit with her in the pudding pie where she asks Mr. J if you want to try some of my pie. Like, really? We did this show ostensibly? Okay.
Oh. Oh man, there's some really, like, yeah, they got pretty close. Yep, they also really gave shout outs to a lot. Like, one of the things I loved about Bruce Timm's work is that, like, when he produced some of the episodes he produced were, first of all, were actually shout outs to previous animators. So you got different the Batman anime, yeah, different designers. Sometimes there's one episode devoted to one off comics, including one of my favorites, which is the one with the old Batman in the tank with the female Robin and zombie apocalypse. It's like one of the coolest segments they ever did on this show, and I think it was in the Batman Return, the second set of Batmans, because there's the Batman animated series, and then there was Batman Returns again, and it was also like the Batman Superman animated adventures. There was all that too, which, by the way, I want to give out a shout out to the Superman animated adventures too, because I actually thought those were well written for what they were. It was the first time I actually felt that Superman was actually a character. I usually don't equate Superman with any kind of, like, emotion. You know, it's Superman. Like, Supergirl's
Superman
a perfect
does
example.
Not get enough love. Superman is eternally, by the vast majority of the geekosphere, is looked down upon as just a Boy Scout and just a, you know, following orders kind of guy. And Superman is so much more. And you're right, the animated Superman stretched him pretty well. You're absolutely right. Batman, the animated series, did much the same for Batman. You were talking a little bit earlier about some of the source material, and comic books will definitely play. I was just rewatching On Leather Wings, the pilot, where we get introduced to Man-Bat, who is one of the scariest villains, I think, as far as artwork goes, he can be one of the scariest. And I was catching all kinds of reference to old silent horror films. There's a little Nosferatu keyhole shot thing. And you're watching an animated cartoon. There's no reason to have that shot there, except they're doing a little reference thing, and it's beautiful.
And we were really lucky to have a well-written, well-animated show. I mean, not all the animation holds up, but they were doing it all by hand. There's not a lot of computer rendering. They didn't really do any of that until the Justice League Unlimited, which is also well-written, by the way. We'll talk about another well-produced show. But going back to Superman and Batman just for a minute. The Superman had actually one of the most horrible deaths of any DC universe, of the animated universe. And this was in the Bruce Timm era. And it was seasons two-parter where Darkseid conquers the Earth. And we actually win. We win. Humanity is saved. Superman is able to contact Orbit, and Orbit comes and is able to push Darkseid back into the tunnel. While this is all going down, the head of the Metropolis Sheriff's Department, he's been kind of this working-class hero and has been fighting these guys on their own terms, and he's rising the people up against them because Batman was out of commission for a while. And he's the true hero of the story. And just out of spite, Darkseid kills him as he's going back into the tunnel. And it is one of the most devastating things I had ever seen. And that was super bad. And at the end of it, that episode ends with a rabbi singing at a funeral with Batman, with Superman there in full costume, saying goodbye to his friend, and it says a true hero at the bottom of his tomb. It is one of the most saddest things, beautiful things I have ever seen. And I'm like, what, you know? So there's again, once again, great stuff, and it carries on. Queenie, is there any moments or episodes that you think about when, or like, if any of them are influential on you, and you're what you like?
I think there's an episode of Batman. I'm trying to remember the character, but there's like this little girl and she has like mind control powers and she's dying. And like throughout the episode, they don't realize that she's dying. and she has like these really superhuman powers, and Batman's just like trying to reach her, and then finally she confesses that she's afraid of dying. And he just holds her in his arms when she dies, and it's like, oh! I can't remember what the character's name was at this moment because I'm a little out of it, but she's just like this little girl, and she's in black and white, and I think it was like one of those episodes with like the cards, the kind of Alice in Wonderland themed cards. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, is it the episode, is it part of the episode where they're all playing poker at the table, the villains, and they're telling their stories?
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, I think that's the one.
It's called Got 'Em All, right? It's actually considered one of the best written episodes of animation, period.
It's so well done.
I'm glad you mentioned that episode because that reminds me, a lot of the stories were taken from previous comic books. There were a number of them. That's one of them that mixed up a couple different things, although the individual stories that Killer Croc and everyone tell are different from what appeared in the comic book. But they actually went back to some like 70s comic books, and in a couple cases, even a couple 40s era Batman comics for their stories.
Well, that one is definitely a favorite of mine.
Is there another? I wanted to say before I go back to Queenie and see if she could think of another one. The bat from the pilot episode, it was just released as a Funko Pop. So they're releasing a line of Batman for the anniversary. So they just released it as Funko Pop. So Queenie, any other things, any other episode, not necessarily all episodes, but it could just be moments in episodes like I was, you know,
Actually everything to do with Mr. Freeze. My god, Mr. Freeze was awesome. His whole story was so painful.
Yeah,
so many things.
And I totally forgot that that was completely a creation of that show.
Mr. Freeze had been in the comic books before, but they totally changed his origin story and made it so much freaking better that it actually changed Mr. Freeze forever. I mean, for the good in the comic books, for the bad in that dreadful Batman and Robin live action with George Clooney and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's not my Mr. Freeze.
No.
That is not my Mr. Freeze.
Even though it's Ice to Mutual.
Stop it.
God. So many bad things about that. Let's not go there.
Heart of Ice, which is the introduction to Mr. Freeze on the show, is also considered one of the best episodes ever. Along with Got 'Em All. It's very beautiful, actually. It's a really great episode. It turns into trope. I mean, really, it's what happens, right? It went from Harley. Harley became suddenly so much more than what they were initially intending, you know, so.
That's how good the show was.
Go ahead.
That's how good the show is, you know. It leaves this impact that the fans were like, we want more of that.
I was a big fan of. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
I was going to say, since you're bringing up individual episodes, I was a big fan of the episode The Man Who Killed Batman. And it kind of reminded me of the Worm's Eye View stories that Will Eisner and his team of writers were so good at doing in The Spirit. There was one story in particular in The Spirit that this old humorist Pfeiffer, James Pfeiffer, was it James Pfeiffer, the playwright and author, had done for The Spirit. And The Man Who Killed Batman is such a great, you know, story. This nebbish character claims to accidentally have killed the Batman, and all the real villains, especially Joker, are pretty pissed about it, and it's just awesome. And it reminded me a lot of the kind of stuff that Will Eisner was so good at with the spirit in his book.
Doesn't the Joker first get really excited and then suddenly realizes that, oh my God, no, you know, we have this thing and now we can't do this thing anymore, and kind of freaks
mm-hmm.
out, right? Yeah.
It's
pretty good. So I like that episode too. Erin Marie, do you have anything that sticks out in any that you think about when you hear Bruce Timm or DC Universe? And it could not just be the shows we're talking about. It could also be some of the movies he produced, like the really good animated Wonder Woman with the zombie army, which is in DC. It's pretty cool. I like that one. One that makes me cry is he produced the All-Star Superman. Did you guys ever see that movie? It is like the saddest, absolutely
yeah.
saddest. It's so good.
I don't know. I don't think I
know. So good.
It's really, first of all, it's very, very, it's adapted from a comic book, and it's very faithful adaptation, if I remember right. At least pieces of it are.
Yep.
The actual story arc in the story is really, like, by the end of it, my daughter and I are, like, holding each other, and we're blubbering. Like, we're both crying our eyes out. I was like, oh, so sad. Like, you know, Lily gets mad at me sometimes when I show her sad things. And she's like, oh, this is not this is a Superman movie. This is Superman. She's so happy at me. I was like, yeah, sometimes Superman doesn't survive happy endings either. I mean, there's not always a happy ending in Superman. Bruce Timm didn't let Superman off the hook. I think that's awesome. You can't be the, like, you know, like, you've got to be, you know, somebody with that much power has to occasionally make mistakes. Because it's like being, you know, the universe and you're an ant and you step on an ant occasionally. You don't mean to. It just happens, right? You didn't see it. Oh, well, it's too late. You know, I have to believe that there's a whole, there, you know, that part of Superman should be explored. And I think he actually did that by introducing, I guess she was in the comic books before, but I've never saw her in medium like television or film until Bruce Timm brought her to our attention. And that was Amanda Waller and from Justice Unlimited.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Suicide
I love
Squad.
Amanda Waller.
She's
a
badass.
She's
a badass.
Yeah. Impressive character. Like, first of all, that she doesn't have superpowers and can, like, and not afraid to stand up to Superman is oh my God. Even if she is occasionally on the wrong side of history, she's often on the wrong side of history. But
she's not a nice lady.
You know,
nope.
Yeah, but she's not unyielding. I mean, she
no.
you know, she
stands,
you know,
her ground.
Yeah, she is not a yielding person, and I really like that. Like, there's some interesting characters in these universes that we got to explore on film in these and they're direct to DVD. You know, you can see a lot of these stuff. Netflix has a few of them. I think All-Star Superman's on Netflix. I also like
which
that
had
he also
a
produced...
great Lex Luthor.
It
I don't
did.
Know what the fuck they were thinking about with Batman versus Superman,
oh,
Dawn of Justice.
I tried to think about that movie.
They had the template for Lex Luthor, and they
right?
fucked it up so bad.
How can you fuck it up? It's so easy.
Jesus, it's right there. They've done it for you already.
Look, this is not a Snyder diss party, and believe me, I am the first to be a
can't
Snyder
diss party. Can we have one of those,
party.
Please?
Yeah. Oh, we have Snyder diss parties all the time. This is about loving DC Universe that works, you know.
Okay.
All of it works. You know, Justice League Unlimited, some of the computer graphics have not held up. You know, the space station looks, it doesn't look so hot. But the story is still pretty badass, and it's a lot of really, like, strong statements about terrorism and supreme power and imperialism and, you know, things that were really, we talked about a lot in the 90s. It was very, very juicy 90s stuff, and you can stream that on Netflix as well if you've never seen Justice League Unlimited. And the animation's pretty good too, you know, except for the CG part. But, you know, we'll forgive that because Hawkgirl's a badass in that one. So, you know, Hawkgirl doesn't get enough love. I always like Hawkgirl.
Not enough.
She's like a
yeah.
not enough
awesome.
Love. Yeah.
We love you,
so,
Hawkgirl.
Yeah, man. I'll drink to Hawkgirl.
Right on.
Right on.
So yeah, it's so funny because I'm rewatching a lot of this stuff with my daughter because she's at the age where she's been watching Justice League now for a little while. Right now she's into Young Justice, which is having a new season come out pretty soon. You know, that's pretty exciting. You know, she's all excited for Young Justice. Now she's into also Teen Titans Go, which is like the comedy sketch. It's a comedy version of
yeah.
Young Justice. You know, Young Justice is actually kind of cool, and this is just a comedy sketch thing, but she really likes it. They did have that song. I should have uploaded it. When I Look Into Your Eyes or something like that by B.E.R., and it's back in the charts because of this episode of Teen Titans Go. I'm going to have to post it for you guys. I should have uploaded it for the show. Yeah, this obscure song. Because when I look at you, I see the story in your eyes. That's how it opens. I don't know. And the group is called B.E.R. And they do this, like, 80s, like, power off, like, with a dragon. It's actually a pretty funny episode. It's not really Bruce Timm, but I had to mention, like, this episode. Because I had to watch it, like, 3 times when I went to go see The Eclipse. Because I kept playing it over and over again on Cartoon Network. So Batman has always been in my life. All the offshoots of it have always been in my life. And here we are still talking about Batman. And
yeah.
I don't think any of us have seen it yet, but on VOD and now dropping on the 29th, which is today, is Harley Quinn and Batman and Harley Quinn, Bruce Timm's return to producing Batman for the 20th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series. So if you go on the web, he's done a bunch of interviews, and it's really easy to find. I think he had a presence at San Diego Comic Con, if I remember right. Is that right, Ms.?
Correct.
Yeah. So I've heard mixed reviews about it, but you know what? Having Kevin Conroy voice Batman is always going to be a good thing. I mean, shout out to Andrea Romero, who retired this year. She's on my wish list for the show. She chose all these voices, including Mark Hamill for Joker, and you know, and Tara Strong eventually will take over for Harley Quinn, who, if we know, Tara Strong is probably my favorite female voice actor of all time, and of course she's on My Little Pony, and she's, you know, Twilight Sparkle, but she's done so much more than that, you know, so much more. So shout out to the voice actors on these shows too. Very well casted. Well produced. They're just well produced. That's why we love Bruce Timm. He is a producer. Producers work their asses off. You know, we sometimes are mean to our producers because they have the money and they tell us no. That's how it works, right? You know, hi, I need money. No. You know, that's their job. But they really do try to, like, so if when they're earnest, they really try to, like, go to bat for you and help you out and give you ideas, and they become a partner, especially on things like this. So animation is all about producing. So it's great. I'm really glad we got to talk a little bit about some geek out on Batman for a little while. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm trying to decide what to play, though, and I should now I'm all bummed because I don't have that song. But I know what I'll play, because guess what? When we come back, we're going to go to the community calendar. And we're going to also talk about some Madness news. So, Erin Marie, before we leave this story, do you want to say anything at all?
As a teenager in the 90s whose little brothers watched Batman, I only found it annoying. I'm only finding it interesting now. So I have not seen that much or done that much. That's why I've been quiet.
I know, and that's good, because I have the whole first season on DVD here at my house, and you're going to be here in a couple days, correct?
Yes, I'll be there Friday.
Guess when I'm going to force you to borrow.
I'm gonna let you borrow it. Oh. Okay.
I wish. I don't have a copy of Life Force. Alex was here. He was asking for a copy of Life Force, and I'm like, really? I would watch it with you, because he didn't know who Tobe Hooper was. So
are you kidding me?
No, he didn't. But he bought me a birthday cake, though, and that was nice of him. So shout out to my friend Alex, gave me a birthday cake. So that balanced it out. So, but anyway, so going back to, I'm going to lend you the entire first season of Batman the Animated Series, and you're going to watch the whole thing. So actually, it's 4 discs, but they're all like half-hour episodes. They're not that long. You can binge it pretty well. You can watch it with your kids. And you're going to come back and you're going to report to us and tell us what you think.
Do I have to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you do. You absolutely have to. You don't know shit about this, and that's good. We want you to go in fresh and just kind of like, you know, and a little bit about it and just enjoy the stories for what they are. You're not going to like all of them, but I guarantee you there's going to be a couple that will stick with you, because I know there's always one or two that does.
Deal.
Yay. Anyway, but you also get a pass that you don't have to do it this weekend. I'm not going to make you start, because we have to do something. We have other business first. So, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, Miss Marie. So anyway, we're going to have a madness break, and I'll be back in just a minute, and we are going to talk about lots of cool things, because guess what? It's almost September, and we're only a month away from Halloween season.
Hey,
what
is
that?
This is the heavy, heavy monster sound, the nuttiest sound around. So if you're coming off the street and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your feet to the rockin'est rock steady beat of madness. One step beyond.
Yeah, you know, animation August is meant to be an easy month for me, right? Easy research, something that I can do on the side, because you can always swallow a lot of animation rather quickly, because it's only, you know, 15 to 20 minute pieces, right? But I ended up doing a lot of research for Bruce Timm. But on the meantime, I'm also, my birthday hit, which means that I start writing the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness. And this is our 10th anniversary. So I've been like totally like in my head thinking about movies, what movies are worth, how long movies are, what kind of movies they are, what I want to focus on. So I'm completely a space cadet, and everyone's looking at me going, what's wrong with you? And I keep looking at them going, it's a madness. And they all kind of step backwards, you know. Okay, I'm exaggerating. But anyway. But I did want to make a mention, because at the start of the community calendar, we want to talk about an early bird special. Now, I often in September or August have an essay contest, but we're not doing that this year. The reason is because this year's focus is going to be for the madness, is movies of the last 10 years, more especially 2017, with an emphasis on zombie films. Plus the greatest hits of bonus points. So there's, and I won't talk about the bonus points later, but I do want to mention that one of the first things for the madness has actually dropped. And it's time, folks, when the first official horror thing drops and opens for the madness that I give points for, that means the season is upon us. Bust out your costumes. Hoard your candy. Go to that Spirit Halloween store. go to that thrift store and get the used stuff because it's just as good as the Halloween spirit store. Go get that shit. Get it. Put it out. Break it. It is time to bust out the Halloween stuff. Fall is upon us. It is September at the end of this week. It is time. After Labor Day, all bets are off. It's madness time. And so here we are talking about madness. And on 8/25, so the first weekend already happened, believe it or not, a movie that is I'm not really a fan of, but a lot of people are. And it started its 4K Restoration Limited Tour. Now, Erin Marie, do you know what movie I might be talking about? Sexy
Suspiria.
Witch film, by the way.
Suspiria.
Yes,
Suspiria.
That's right. Yep. Absolutely. Synapse Films has released a 4K restoration of Suspiria from the original 35mm negative, and they're taking it on tour. The tour started last weekend, and it plays at art houses every weekend all the way up through Halloween weekend. And I think it even goes to the first weekend in November. So there's plenty of chances to hit this 4K restoration. And so I've decided, first of all, Argento is going to be 6 points for all Argento movies for the this year. There's reasons for this. I'll explain later when I read the rules, but I'm giving a bunch of hints tonight. But the first official early bird special is going to be going to see Suspiria in the 4K restoration. If you go to that screening in particular, and there's a list, and I will post it on Archivist Bets on Sexy Witches Plays, as well as the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon group page, which if you want to participate, please join that group. We love talking horror in that group. You know, and if you go to one of those screenings, I'm going to give a flat rate of 10 points for those screenings. If you travel more than 50 miles one way, I will give you your mileage at 1 point an hour. So again, an extra point for mileage. So if you did that, go see the if you're a huge fan of Suspiria and you were thinking about going to see it, but the drive is a little far, maybe an hour, do it. Do it for horror. Do it for Halloween. Do it for madness. Go see it. And if you do do that, I am retrofact. You can go see, and it will count for points on your first summary. So, and like I said, 10 full points to go see those screenings. So if you're listening and you're into the madness, there it is. I made my first early bid special. But wait, there's more. There's another one. I have another early bird special, but I'm not talking about it this week because, believe it or not, the next time we come back, Sexy Witches, is actually only a week away. We come back promptly on Tuesday, September 5th, to have a recap of Dragon Con. And by the way, I forgot, that's our dragon episode. So you'll have to, your homework will be counting down your top 10 favorite dragons. I thought we'd do it as a round robin because that's always fun. So
nice.
We'll talk about that later, but it's dragons time. Dragons are upon us. I'll get that early bird special will happen next week, and that one is going to be a little bit more accessible to other people. And if you know me and you know my loves and you know last year's theme, you can probably pretty much figure out what the special bonus will be early bird special. Next weekend, not the one that's coming up, but the following one. And
I know what comes out that week, so.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do. If you're on the show. Oh, by the way, Queenie, I want to say something about your jump squares. It just reminded me. I love one of the things you do sometimes when you correct yourself is the picture of Queenie Werewolf pops up and corrects you trivia wise. I'm like, oh. That's the sexy witch part of her correcting herself. I love that.
Thank you.
Queenie Beast is correcting your little Queenie Demon character. It's really funny. I totally got that. Yeah, it's cute. I like that. I thought that was really cute.
Thank you.
Anyway,
I'm made up of many characters, you know.
All right, so that's just the beginning of the calendar. We got a couple more things, and if we get through it, maybe we can even book off early, though I know I always say that we never actually do. So let's bring out the rest of the calendar and get this done. You know, oh, but, you know, it's the fall, and there's so much things to do. Oh, it's heavy, though. That's because Disney's in it, and they're always loaded. Yeah, so we have, of course, like I said today, we have our DVD pick of this episode of Sexy Witches is Batman and Harley, which you can get on DVD or Blu-ray, but it's already available on VOD also. So it's been out for a little while that way. So you're welcome to watch it. More Bruce Timm, more Kevin Conroy in our life. But Disney is also dropping something big this weekend, too. Everyone's bringing on their A-game because it's Labor Day weekend. And in Orlando, one of the better things to do at Disney is happening this weekend. It is the Disney's Epcot International Food and Wine Festival. So that's my media convention pick of the week. There's actually three of them this week. But that one I thought I'd mention. Now, Aaron Kogan.
Yes.
Have you ever been to the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival?
I have indeed. It's pretty awesome. You wander around, mostly outside, which Florida weather this time of year, but all kinds of fun added on food and booze beverages, lots of silliness. Also, at night, there's a special event at Magic Kingdom. And soon here in Disneyland, too. Theirs is not-so-scary Halloween, and it features the single best Disney parade I've ever seen in my life, Boo to You, and lots of other silly, fun Halloween nonsense. You can actually go to the park in costume. You can trick-or-treat throughout the park. They have stations set up where you collect candy. You can get pictures taken with a lot of the more obscure characters and villains that aren't normally out in the park, and it's a great time.
Well, I've heard really good things about this event, and I will tell you, when I was looking at it, because I've known about it for a while, it had me at Cheese Seminar. It's like supposedly in every area there's like cheese everywhere, and if you got samples of cheese, I'm like completely happy with that.
Cheese and
so
fun foreign beers everywhere, and you know, wine and all kinds of other spirits. I'm trying to remember, someone gave us all kinds of fun flavored vodka in light up glasses, and I can't remember what country that was, but it's fun. A little pricey, but recommended.
Great. So yeah, that's true about Disney almost everywhere now. A little pricey, but recommended.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't feel like I feel cheated when I go to a Disney park. I never feel that way. I feel like from the moment I meet the security guard in the parking lot, I'm completely taken care of. They just, boom, guest services is just astounding. I don't know what they do to these people, but the guest services is so good at Disney. But still, wow. I mean, the walk in the door, it was, oh my God, it was so much money. It was like Sunday. You got a very expensive habit, my dear. No wonder you have to live in Buena Park, because if you moved away, you would just be mainlining it, and it would just take all your money. So,
that's it.
At least here, so you gotta live nearby. It's for the sake of your wallet and your marriage, you gotta live near Disney, or you'll never be happy. So, it's too expensive otherwise. And one more thing before we go on, I also like to remind people, and I'm reminding all the sexy witches this too, because I know that Erin Marie has a couple near her. There's still a few drive-ins in LA. I don't know, is there a drive-in near you in Queenie in Seattle?
I haven't found one.
Yeah, I mean, supposedly there are in Seattle or in Washington drive-ins. I just don't remember.
I don't know if there's any near me. Probably not.
I bet you it's like some little obscure island or something like that, right? Because there's all those little islands.
True.
Well, I looked up a and there's three near you outside of Seattle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, one's way out there. One's way out there in the Colesville Reservation, Auto View. It says View like that, drive-in theater.
Right.
Little closer to Seattle, Wheelin Motor Drive-In Movies. And then the Skyline Drive-In Theater, which is that they're all on the other side of Seattle. So there's three, actually. There's an adventure ahead. But the reason why I mentioned drive-ins, because the seasons are almost over for most of the drive-ins, but Labor Day is always one of the best times to go to the drive-in because most of the drive-ins open their stuff for camping or have all-night marathons, including mine here in Benji's. And Benji's is a great lineup this year, including Dunkirk and Atomic Blonde. So, I mean, if I wasn't so busy all the time with another thing that myself and Erin Marie was doing, that's what I'd be doing this weekend, is I'd be going to the all-night marathon at your local drive-in. So please, everyone, support your local drive-in. So... Also, September 1st in Queenie, this is the time of year of dragons, us fantasy creatures. Our own ilk go to Atlanta for a weekend and dress in horns and devils dance the night away with techno music and whatever else is going on. So Dragon Con is here. So I've always wanted to go to Dragon Con because fantasy was my first love. I loved it before I loved science fiction, before I loved horror, but I don't know if I'll ever make it down to Atlanta to go. I mean, I go to Atlanta more often than I realize, but I don't know. Dragon Con is really hard to get near. Have you ever wanted to try to go to Dragon Con or fantasize about Dragon Con, like some
yes.
of us fantasy?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's a lot. It's San Diego Comic-Con for the East Coast is what it is. I mean, it's huge. And it's really hard to get tickets and stuff, I believe. They have the whole waiting list thing that you have to sign up for and all that.
Yeah, they do it by membership, which makes it a little harder. But then again, that model seems to be also, San Diego Comic-Con does that too now. You know, it seems to be more and more the norm that they're doing these, like, memberships for these media conventions. This one is pretty big this year. And for people who can't get into the show, on the 2nd in the afternoon, there's going to be their annual parade, and the boys of the Netherworld Haunted House are going to march in the parade again, which is our favorite walkthrough. It's in Atlanta. Roy Rooley of Face Off did the special effects there for years and years and years. And our boy Nathan Hamilton, who has a media convention this weekend we have to talk about in a few minutes. So it all goes – all of this works together. Everyone's working together here. So go to Dragon Con if you're into fantasy. The cosplay is serious. The makeup is more serious. Some of the best amateur makeup effects competitions you will ever see are at Dragon Con. That's one of the reasons why I would love to go, because I would love to see that kind of stuff. So go to Dragon Con. Matter of fact, the guy that usually wins Dragon Con often wins Days of the Dead Atlanta, too. So there's that. You know, very talented people behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, all over Dragon Con. So that's in Atlanta. And speaking of Atlanta, of course, the Days of the Dead brand is very popular there. That's the media convention that Erin Marie and I went to in February. It was the second time we were invited as press. I went the year before that as well. They have a few smaller shows they do across the nation. And this weekend, September 1st, is Days of the Dead, Louisville, Kentucky. So first of all, let me give you the guest list for Dragon Con, because I didn't actually tell you that list. And then I'm going to tell you the list for Days of the Dead. And let's see, guess which one is, where is Kane Hodder? Which one is he at?
Days of the Dead.
Yeah, I know. It's too easy. I was seeing if you could, like, see if I was trying to fool you. So anyway, he's at Days of the Dead. So, okay, so Alex Kainton from Doctor Who, Billy Piper's there, and this is Dragon Con. Brent Spindler from, he played Data on Star Trek, he's going to be there. And Carol Barrowman. The Barrowmans are always awesome. Casper Van Dien and Dina Meyer from Starship Troopers. And they're, even though I know the movie's several years old now, go to their panels. Dina Meyer and Casper Van Dien know how to drop an excellent panel. So they are so much fun. So David Yost. So I think most of the Power Rangers are there because, of course, with the movie this year, there was a big resurgence. Get this: the guy who played in Buck Rogers played Twinkie. Felix Silla is going to be there. So the guy is like, do you remember Buck Rogers, the 80s TV show, and the little silver robot that would carry around the one with the face?
Twinkie.
Yeah, he's going to be at Dragon Con, by the way. And Gates McFadden, also from Star Trek. So, and Gil Gerard, Buck Rogers himself, is going to be there, who's on my bucket list to meet. I'd love to meet him. Herman Aaron Gray are both cool. So, I mean, it keeps going. You have probably every single Carl Urban, your boy, is there. John Cusack's there. I mean, it's everyone you want to see. Dragon Con, horror geeks do it. Everyone does Dragon Con. It's like that big. But we still got a lot of other things too. And Days of the Dead has a nice little list too of solid horror lineups. So if you want to go somewhere smaller, you can go to Louisville instead. Go see Linda Blair and Tony Todd and Ernie Hudson. And of course, if you have Sid Haig, not too far behind him usually is Bill Moseley. And one of my people I'd love to go to this panel, Gary fucking Busey, is going to be at Days of the Dead Louisville.
Wow.
Awesome. His Jake does shows. Jake does a lot of shows. I don't know. Gary doesn't do shows very often. I would camp out for that panel. Oh, my God.
Monster Mania a few years ago.
Oh, dude. I would love to go see Gary Busey on a panel. I just want to hear him talk. I don't even care about what subject. I just want to hear Gary Busey talk. It would just be like, oh, my God, I'd be so excited. I love the show I'm with Gary Busey. I actually thought that was a brilliant show. But if you have Bill Moseley and Sid Haig to make the complete set, you, of course, have to have Kane Hodder. And so Kane Hodder is also at Days of the Dead. But once again, a shout-out again to Nathan Hamilton, the son of Celluloid out of Atlanta. He's been doing the secondary track for Days of the Dead since Atlanta this year. They're calling it the blue track. And he's doing a blue track for this one as well with a lot of independent makeup artists and filmmakers doing stuff and talking about other media conventions, shenanigans, including how to do effective cosplay, all that kind of stuff. So that's Days of the Dead Louisville. So we only have two more things on the list because we leave for a week and then we come back. So we're going to be done here at 10:30, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God! Woo-hoo! We're going to get off early tonight. So let me.
Did we forget to mention?
Raising?
No.
I was going to say. Yeah, and one of them's our thing, right?
Yes, that's right. I was saving the best for last. All right. So September 1st, if you can't do any of those other awesome things because you don't have money or you're not near Louisville or you're not near Atlanta or they're just sold out of tickets in Atlanta, you can still go and you don't have a drive-in because, face it, some people across the country don't have drive-ins and it's terrible that they don't have drive-ins. Mm. But there's places that have very few drive-ins. Luckily, there's still one more treat, and it's in a local theater near you. So you can look it up on Fandango. And on September 1st, starting for a week run, week-long run, so 1 week, right? 1 week only. Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind is hitting the theaters for the 40th anniversary with a brand new director's cut in 4K. And it'll be in theaters in the U.S. and in Canada. And it's having its world premiere at the Venezia Classica section of the Venice Film Festival this weekend. So check your local listings. And I saw that film first run in the theaters, and it is breathtaking. And it stuck with me for years. even as a kid, I was absolutely floored by Close Encounters. I saw it, I think, 2 or 3 times in the theaters, actually. I went back to see it multiple times. So so that is something that if you can't do media conventions, I thought this is a good alternative. Go see some classic Spielberg in the theaters. Nobody throws a kid performance down like Steven Spielberg, and those kids' performances in this movie are great. And the whole thing, it's just so good. Anyway, go see it. But last but not least, myself and Erin Marie, we are going to hook up again this weekend, being partners in crime, and we are going to go to the Colonial Theater in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, home of the Blob, of course, and Blob Fest. But this time of year is a different kind of fest altogether. It's the Italian Splatter Fest. So Italian Splatter Fest 6. The first year without James Harris, which is like devastatingly terrible on so many levels, but I'm hoping I get to see some people and say hi and give them my love and enjoy. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this year's lineup is definitely a love letter to James.
Oh my God. It is so good. Like he would love every single one of these films on this list. And the only film I would say that would make this like truly his, if we were watching Fulci's Black Cat, that would be the only one I would add to this list. But the list is amazing. So it's 5 films, including a secret movie. Ooh, what could it be? I don't know. We can't talk about the secret movie. But the movies we do know. And I don't know the order yet. This order is not the definite order. I'm kind of hoping that Demons, though, is in the spot that they have it in, because that would be perfect for me. But anyway, that's different. Okay, Mario Bava's Blood and Black Lace, which I've never seen, so that would get that one out of the way. Argento's The Blurred with the Crystal Plumage, which is one of his first movies, and it's the full-on giallo. It's not really a horror film. It's straight up, you know, serial killer, beautiful models, and some amazing cinematography. It's probably Argento and I are hit or miss, but it is my second favorite Argento. I actually really like this one. James Harris gave me his copy, so I saw it because of him. And it's really beautiful. Like, the cinematography is outstanding in that. So I love to see that on the big screen. And then, of course, we got to throw in some schlock. So Bruno Mattei, the worst zombies ever, the Guardians of Hell. Is his film, so we're playing that. So yay, I love Bruno Mattei. He's so terrible, wonderful. I love the messiness of Bruno Mattei movies, and the thievery. They often he thieves on some goblin scores occasionally. So and it gets hysterical. And of course, the film that I convinced Erin Marie that there was value in Italian horror films, because she had tried and tried and was about to give up. And I said, well, let me give you Demons.
Demons.
So Umberto Barvin's Demons.
Oh, yeah.
And they played Demons 2 a couple years back, but they actually have not played Demons. And I know, and I've actually seen Demons twice this year for different reasons. I just happened to catch it twice. So this would be like
me
my
too.
Third time seeing Demons this year.
It's one of my favorites.
But it'll be my first time in the theater, so it's going to be extremely exciting to get to see it on the big screen.
And especially that theater, because it's kind of creepy. You know, that theater's old and faded, so it's going to add to the atmosphere. You know what
I'm
saying?
It's awesome.
And then, of course, it's awesome. Go ahead.
I was just going to say Demons 2 was the first year I attended, so this will be my third out of the 6 years that they've done it. Half the time, that's good.
I didn't do it last year. But I am definitely going to do it this year, and I'm going to sit through. I'm probably going to take a break during Demons, but I am going to sit through all the other films, and especially the mystery movie. I can't wait to see what it's going to be. According to its listing, it's a awesome mystery movie. So anyway, so Italian Splatter Fest, and one final hit for the madness. By the way, Dario Argento, Umberto Bava, Mario Bava, and Bruno Mattei will all be 6-point automatic triple bonus directors this year. So, so there's going to be Italian horror is going to be top points this year. So I'm having so much fun putting this year's greatest hits of the madness together. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks or in two episodes from now on the September 19th. That's going to be the live read of the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness, so mark your calendars. But we'll come back in only a week, folks. I know the endurance, it's hard to do, but we're going to do it. We're going to come back a week. On September 5th, we should have someone calling in from Atlanta to recap Dragon Con for us, and we will talk about our favorite dragons in film, television, and literature, because all of us love monsters and dragons go in. And by the way, Game of Thrones just ended. That was the last thing I wanted to talk about. Speaking of dragons, what do you think?
A lot of fan service, but an awful lot of fun.
We'll talk about this more on our next episode, because we do want to talk about the dragons of Game of Thrones. If we're going to talk about dragons, we can't.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're the elephants in the room. If you know what I'm saying. Mixing metaphors. But we saw our evil zombie ice dragon, and all I want to say is that the only character I gave a fuck about this year was Tormund. Everybody else can go away. Tormund was awesome, but we'll talk about that more
Podrick?
Later. Podrick was awesome, and so was Gendry. I liked Gendry, and Davos was cool too. But still. But anyway, we'll talk about Game of Thrones on the next episode, because that's the dragon episode. So, Queenie, any final thoughts, and then we're gonna start closing down for the night.
No, not really. I think we've covered everything.
All right.
Except Harley's the best, of course.
Oh, and you have some dragons in mind, right?
I'm thinking about dragons. I'm not sure what my favorite dragon is yet, but...
Well, we'll do one of our round robins, and that's always traditional to do around here. We read our top five, but we have a top 10, and I'll get the rules on the next episode, but we always like to read our dragon. I just thought it would be fun to pick, talk about our favorite dragons that way. And so, Queenie, thank you for being on the show, and I hope you can join us next week. I know that flipping back-to-back is tough sometimes, but it was the only way we could get the madness in the right spot, so that was kind of important. So, Aaron Kogan on the West Coast as well, thank you for coming in and talking Bruce Chim with us. You're off the hook for next week. You don't have to be here for Dragons. If you want to come back for the live read the week after that, that's completely up to you, because I know you're thinking about being a contestant. So
definitely going to be a contestant.
When you call in during the live read, I give you 5 points. So,
I'll already be here for the live read.
Cool.
I should mention
Erin Marie only gets 2 because she's a work handicap. But because if you call in because you're a correspondent, you get 5. But I give her 5 too because I'm nice. So anyway,
nice.
You're nice. You get the 5-point handicap. So anyway, you don't even have to work hard, and you're already making points for the madness. You know, so go see the Suspiria 4K restoration, make some points. And Erin Marie, thank you. I will see you in a couple weeks, and then we're going to talk about Batman. I want you to give these shows a shot, okay? Erin Marie.
Yes.
I said I really want you to give these shows a shot. So you've got, get with an open mind. All 3 of us love Batman, these shows in particular. So give them a shot and see if you like them. Watch them with your kids. Your kids will probably like them. Or watch them with Lily. Lily will like that too. The Evil Genius likes these.
Is it weird to say the reason I don't really like cartoons like that is just because they're serious cartoons? If I'm going to watch cartoons, I want my shit to be funny.
Oh, but
there's a lot of funniness
on these shows. Yeah, these are really well written. So I like a little bit of everything. So that's how I feel about it. But anyway, thank you for being.
There's really good humor in these.
Think about your dragons. Think about Batman.
It's like reading Prince Valiant to me.
And Erin Marie, I will tell you this about the dragons next week. You are allowed to count Gallivant.
Yay!
Tad Cooper!
Oh, Tad Cooper!
I super believe in Tad Cooper.
I do too. I have the T-shirt. I have the T-shirt
that says
I believe in Tad Cooper.
Aw, I love that. Okay.
I will make sure that I upload my Jagged Talon Me song, too, for the show.
It's the best song of the whole damn series.
It'll be really fun. I think next week's going to be fun, and it's just going to be us sexy witches. So, except for I might have somebody calling in for Dragon Con, but it'll be like a recap for 15 minutes. So, mostly just us. So, anyway, guys, we're out of here. I don't know what the heck. I didn't actually load any music for a closeout. You know what I usually do, right? But I didn't tonight. So, I'm just going to pick something randomly I have here, and what are we going to play? How about the love theme to Mystery Science Theater 3000? That's always a good way to go out, right? All right, all right. So, because also, this is the second-to-last episode of our regular season, and then it's to our special episodes for the final, the best of, and all that stuff. And Mystery Science Theater 3000 will definitely be part of our best of episode in November. These are a few of our favorite things. But in the meantime, come join us again on the 5th of September as we recap Italian Splatterfest and talk about Dragon Con and our favorite dragons. All of this coming to you from Archivist Bets on Sexy Witches, a podcast from the Geek Girls perspective. I am the head huntress, and thank you again for all my sexy witches. Thank you for the Necrocasticon for guest hosting on their next two episodes. I really was flattered that they invited me on. And thank you for listening, whoever is out there, because we couldn't do this without you. We will continue to do this whether you're out there or not, but really, we knowing you're there makes us want to do it all the more. So we'll leave you with Mystery Science Theater 3000. Good night now.